Good morning, folks. It's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show about political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the real challenges facing Arizonans. Folks, Steve Williamson here. Mike Cosentino is, I'll give you two alternative explanations. He's either having his eyeballs replaced today or he's having a cataract operation. So good luck, Mike. He's not with us today. With us in the studio is Gary LeMaster.
Good morning.
You've heard Gary many times, and he's a researcher and writer for BVID. And I have my brother here, Chuck Williamson. And Chuck worked for the Army Security Agency in Vietnam decades ago. So he basically worked for the NSA. And so we brought him in to give perspective. And even though when he was working there, it's decades ago, the logic and the problems haven't changed that much. In some ways they've changed, in some ways they haven't changed. Chuck?
Yes, thank you, Steve. Yes, I had an interesting experience in 1972, a year in Vietnam, in a base near Hue. And it is true that the whole NSA situation going on today, some of which astonishes me, because they're violating some of the most basic concept of compartmentalization in intelligence that we were very well aware of. But they're facing many of the same problems we did, which is not too little data, but too much.
And so you're sitting in this base, which the North Vietnamese are not particularly happy about, and they're occasionally shooting at you, and you're deciphering. How many communication did you decipher, you think, in a year?
Yeah.
Or not decipher, but translate?
Yeah, so I wasn't involved in decoding the cryptography, but we had things like diaries, and we had the North Vietnamese, as they infiltrated down to South Vietnam, often kept diaries of their days, as they, you know, and they were all sort of had these patriotic connotations and so on, because they knew they might be read by the political officer. But if we ended up with one, it gave us some valuable intelligence, because we know that if a guy on February 2nd said, "Boy, it was scary. I'm glad we were underground. The bombs exploded just real close to where we were," you go back and look and see where the bombs, you know, where we had dropped bombs that time, and you can kind of pinpoint where their underground bases are. So there's lots of intelligence activity like that. But the trouble is you get enormous piles of stuff. So I spent 10 hours a day, 7 days a week, translating documents and pages and so on. And only one time did that document warrant strategic referral up to the White House level. The rest of them, there were probably every day some tactical things that may have gone to military people in Vietnam, but nothing we gathered. And I think I'm the only one that sent anything all the way up to a strategic level. So on four translators and five translators on some shift working for a whole year, there's only one document that was of strategic importance.
And this is a fairly simple venue, and I don't mean that in kind of derisive way, but it's a war. It's taking place in one country. It's military and political intercepts. And you're compartmentalized. You don't know how the cryptographers are decrypting stuff. They don't know what you're translating. They don't know what you're sending on up to higher ups.
Yes, exactly. And I had sit reps for Southeast Asia, so I knew things going on in Laos and so on as the background for the data, so you'd understand it better. But I had no information about what was happening in East Germany, Russia. See what I mean? So the idea that people like Bradley Manning and Edward Snowden can capture enormous quantities of data, to me, shows there's a very serious flaw in the systems we're using. It should be impossible to capture data from every embassy's communication all over the world. That's just bizarre that they had that poor. So I think, among other things, what this points out is they have not figured out how to control data, and they actually lost ground of things as
so
it got computerized.
So it's more complicated, but it's less efficiently compartmentalized. And so fairly low level individuals, and maybe I think if you talk to Bill Timmerman, he would say, probably those are always the people that have the most access around your compartmentalization. It's your system administrators and stuff like that on these complex systems. So the problem in Vietnam is you're translating all this stuff, and most of it's not useful.
That's true. And so on a given day, there might be something that says, once translated says, we attack a certain place at a certain time. So there were tactical things that were useful to the local commander. But in terms of anything that was useful on a macro basis, now we did have a sort of an early version of metadata. Let's say like today, metadata is collecting all these phone records, all this stuff as a source that you can go back to and then do later research. The example we talked about was the Boston Marathon bomber. I don't know if this happened, but if you've collected the metadata from his cell phone and you have it stored, you can go back and search that cell phone number and see about his buddies and who they were that he was talking to regularly. And those were the guys that went into his room and took the computer and the other evidence out. So, I mean, it is useful to collect the data, and if you haven't collected it in the past, there's nothing you can do about it. You can't reconstruct it.
So, Gary, let's talk about metadata. And Bill talked about it really well last week. But let's talk to folks about the difference between metadata and actually listening into a call or reading a letter, and how powerful a tool it is in intelligence for, I guess, bad, good, or evil.
That was the point I was going to bring up with when Chuck mentioned metadata. It's really not the transcripts of phone calls or of emails and things like that. It's who you called, what time. It's the stuff that you get on your phone bill. That at the end of the month, it's the date you called, the time you called, the time the length of the phone call, and the number that you dialed.
So why is that so useful, Gary?
Well, as Bill pointed out last week, you can piece together someone's activities by looking at the metadata and saying, in his case, he used an instance of a woman who had called a doctor, an oncologist, and then following that, you can see that she called a financial advisor, or she called
her children,
her extended family, and it doesn't take you very long to piece together that she has cancer and that she has terminal cancer. So you can put together a lot of information from metadata. But the thing
So there's the secret information that's being transmitted, or the just regular private information that's being transmitted. And they're looking at where the information is going to and from, what the rate is, and so forth and so on, that can tell you a lot about what you want to look for.
To me, the interesting point of all of this revelation is that this has been going on by corporations for years. When you buy something from Amazon, you get an email, a little time later that suggests you buy other movies or books that are, similar to that title. Department stores were collecting data on your purchases so that at one time, I was in the ad business, at one time they were working on a system where you would—they would have cameras on their doors, and when you walked in the door, you were greeted by a voice saying, "Welcome, Mr. Williamson. We have a special and whatever department that you had most recently purchased in," and they would actually guide you to things around the store, so it knew exactly who you were and what your shopping habits were. This isn't really anything new, and this isn't even really high tech spy stuff. And the other thing I think that came out of this whole revelation
Gary, okay. Let me interrupt you. This whole thing, the current controversy, starts when Edward Snowden releases a court order, secret court order, And the secret court order allows the government to collect absolutely tons of material. Nobody's shocked that there's a court order, perfectly legal, to collect somebody who's suspected of being a spy's information. But this was this general order, and the shock is the level at which NSA was collecting data. They seemed to be wanting to collect every single transmission everywhere in the world all the time and keep it for, you know, for extended period.
I don't think it's a shock to a lot of people. It certainly wasn't to me. And I read or heard a story about the reaction in Europe. And most of the people in Europe, it was a big yawn. They thought we were doing this all along. It was no surprise to them whatsoever.
Yeah, well, I assumed we were too.
Yeah, so I think Edward Snowden's situation was a media one, but I don't think any of the governments involved, like the Russians or the Chinese, this is any news to them. Now, it is concerning to me that he flew from Hawaii to China, admittedly Hong Kong, and then to Russia, where he still is. I think the guy is trying to sell information, but how much useful information he has, I have no idea.
So if Snowden, and he's been accused of being a traitor, if Snowden is just releasing information, secret information, to the public, he's a whistleblower. And what he does may be legal or may be very much illegal, but it's certainly not a kind of treasonable activity. It's not really espionage from any foreign country. He may be doing harm. He may be doing good, but it's not about these accusations that he's a traitor or something, right?
Well, I'd have to say, unless there's a trial and evidence is presented, I have no idea whether he's a traitor or not. I know what he's doing might be harmful to the U.S., but it might not. It's certainly not harmful in terms of the major countries who are doing the same thing. I'm sure the Chinese have those same records. So what I think it may be harmful is if there are people in small cells, not necessarily even Al-Qaeda, but you know, small cells that want to do us harm, some group, they might not have understood it. I'm not sure that everyone in the world understood it, but I think the major governments all did.
Yeah, I think the thing is that Al-Qaeda is extremely secretive organization. They're raised on secret. They're trained in all kinds of compartmentalization. Osama bin Laden sends no transmissions of any electronic transmissions from where he is.
They're sending things by jump drive, yeah.
Courier's slowest, safest way. But insofar as they think their stuff might be deciphered, I think probably it is possible that they underestimated the impact of just collecting the metadata, and that there may be basically some truth to the NSA saying that we did all the stuff based on it, because that they might not have understood what Bill was pointing out, what you can learn just from the metadata.
Let me give you an example. For example, while we might have been able to break many codes or understand many transmissions, even if we didn't, assuming nothing, if you looked at, we could find the direction, the location of a radio transmission. If you just have the radio transmissions of people checking in, you soon pinpoint the headquarters, you know, where the various units are stationed, you know, I mean, so even with nothing but knowing a call is made from this location and received and acknowledged in this location tells you a lot about the whole network. You can even tell the level of authority, how big these units are. There's lots of supposition you can make from simply data with no content at all. And so there is military significant stuff all the time. So the order of battle of the Russian army, for example, can be determined indirectly by their internal communications. And that's been true since the 1970s.
So do you think, both of you, Mr. Professor, both of you, do you think what the NSA is doing harmful in collecting this vast information, a lot of it on Americans, suppose they're doing exactly what they say. They haven't unlocked any boxes. They haven't looked at anybody's transmissions without a court order. They haven't used it for political purposes. Are you disturbed or not so disturbed in terms of the Fourth Amendment, the right to unreasonable search and seizures? Does that affect what's happening here?
Well, as I wrote in the blog this last week after last week's show, is that the and Bill pointed out at the beginning of the show that the key word in the Fourth Amendment is unreasonable search and seizure. Unreasonable being the operative word. I personally think that this revelation is great because it's generated a discussion that really needs to be had. The thing that troubles me less than the government collecting the data, because they're really not collecting it as much as the corporations are. You know, this is all made possible by the search engines keeping records of your searches. They don't have to. They do that because they're trying to improve their ability to market themselves and to sell advertising on their search engine.
So let me ask you a sub-question then, to the question of how disturbed you are by what the NSA is doing. As some people see the big problem is government collection of data. Other people see the big problem as being the vast collection of private data. We talked about last week, some people really value their privacy. Some people to extreme degree, some people not at all. They put basically everything they are doing day by day in Facebook. I mean, you could use Facebook for any kind of nefarious purposes.
And so, people do.
Yeah. So, Chuck, what about you? And Gary's concerned about the private use of all this data.
Yes. So in the government system, at least now as it's constituted, I understand it wasn't that way under the Cheney-dominated Cheney-Bush White House. They have to have a court order. Now, is that court a rubber stamp? I don't know. But at least that gets me past the unreasonable deal. Private businesses have no such obligation. Google has every record of every search you ever made. If you searched for pressure cookers, Google knows that, you know. So they could, you know, so there's lots of data out there in private hands where there doesn't seem to be any legal limitation on their use. So I'd have to say I'm more concerned about the abuses that could happen that way. The other information, I don't know that the NSA collects credit card information, but if they do, they know everything you bought. So they, you know, with a credit card. So they know if you bought ammunition online for your AK-47, they know
really
everything.
See what I'm saying? Disturb our libertarian friends.
I think there's reason to be disturbed about a lot of data. It's not so much the phone data that concerns me, is I don't know what else is being done, but I know that the credit card companies have all that information, you know. So there's a huge amount. We've gotten used to and blasé about the idea of we buy things online, we do all this stuff online, we use electronic payments for almost everything. But when we do, we have left a permanent record of what we have. So if you go into a gun store and buy anything with your credit card or ammunition, then the government can know that. That doesn't mean that they haven't ever released it, they're collecting it, but they have, you know, if they are, they have that data.
But could they open that without a court order? You mentioned the court orders. There's only been, I think, since in the Obama, there's a couple of hundred of them. They're almost never turned down. That doesn't really mean anything, folks, the fact that over the years, very few requests for a FISA search have been turned down because prosecutors, what have to having a court order does, it forces you, if you want information, to really explain why you want it and make a case for it. It's like a prosecutor's thing. Does the prosecution have enough evidence to go forward? And when they ask the FISA court that, the FISA court 99% of the time plus says yes, you do. So are there but, checks and balances,
yes,
here.
But there are no checks and balances on the private use of the same information. So that actually concerns me more than the government use, where there's at least a requirement to go before the court to get that.
And increasingly, that data is being kept offshore. You know, a lot of the IT is now being done in places like India and, you know, for private corporations. It you know, just think about all of the areas that collect data on you, as Chuck was talking about, banks, you know, we have credit scores, we, you know, people know whether that you, you know, if you were late a day on a payment, what you purchased, you know, it goes everywhere. And it wouldn't take much to piece together someone's entire life. Just from the private, not even private, the data collected by corporations. Now you add into the mix the fact that the government was contracting people like Booz Allen Hamilton, you know, corporations to collect the data. Well, that's where Snowden worked. And so you have a very complex issue, which I think it's good that we're having the discussion here and we're about to have it, you know, nationally. I think it's great.
Yes, I'd have to say Chase Manhattan Bank knows more about me than the government. You know, they have all my credit card data. They know every check I write, you know, so I'm not afraid because I'm not putting, you know, I'm not doing things that
I shouldn't.
You're
not a terrorist.
Yeah, but the reality is, I think banks know more about you than the government. They have more information unless there's government collection of data that we don't yet know about.
But is it a violation of the Fourth Amendment? Now, obviously, collecting foreign intelligence doesn't count, right? The stuff you were doing in Vietnam it's in a foreign country, it's a foreign enemy, you're in a war. Even if you're not in a war, data of people who are not U.S. persons, not U.S. citizens, there's a different set of rules for that. But they're collecting, if this seems to be correct, and we I know that some of the technical people say that the press has misstated what was actually happening, but they seem to be collecting and holding an absolutely astonishingly detailed amount of information the government does on everybody. And even if they're not misusing it now, what's to keep them from misusing it in the future? Our protection?
I think the Congress should act on privacy issues in some sort of definitive way. I think it's unlikely, but the executive branch set up these judicial reviews, but there should be a congressional action that limits both corporate activity and government activity related to this, requiring certain standards. I don't know exactly what they are, since there is so much data out there. It's like we started the conversation with, there's so much data, there's nothing you can do with it unless you focus on an individual and collect that. And that's what the government does. I don't think there's any way to manipulate all that data, but there may be now programs and things that would take all the phone data and point out, well, this is a potential terrorist. Maybe there is. I don't know.
You said earlier that when we were talking, that you didn't think Snowden could do all the stuff he says he could do. You're skeptical.
You know, Snowden has, even in his interviews and stuff, has done all this hyperbole. And I told you this story about in Vietnam. We heard stories about what happened in other areas that got passed around as people were transferred, or historical stories of what had happened at Phu Bai in earlier times and in the 68 Tet Offensive. A lot of that was anecdotal. I might have presented it as facts, but I had no direct knowledge of any of that stuff. So I suspect, for example, he told the Guardian that he made $200,000 a year, but Booz Allen, when they fired him, said he made $122,000 a year. Well, that's kind of a trivial deal. That Booz Allen also said that he fabricated his educational credentials on his application. But, you know, the guy's not very straightforward. Now, he may be truly a libertarian that believes that this information has to go out. But if he was, why would he go to China and then to Russia? That bothers me a lot, that he's probably just trying to sell information.
Well, I think, you know, this raises a number of issues with regard to Snowden and what he knew. I think how people view Snowden is somewhat based on not only on ideology, you know, and even they're split. I mentioned earlier before we went on air that Glenn Beck considers him a hero, and Dick Cheney from the same side of the political spectrum considers him a traitor. But I think
liberal intellectuals are basically on Snowden's side, but liberals in government, regular Democrats are basically very critical of what he did. So
there's
a division there, too, right?
It's a generational issue as well, in my view, is that you have a generation that grew up with the internet and with the web that really believes everything on the internet is free. And that there should be no restrictions or limitations on anything that's transmitted on the internet. And so they, you know, they download music and think it should be free. They download content from sites, et cetera. And these people, you know, this generation to me is showing itself in places like the Arab Spring in Egypt and in Turkey and Greece, et cetera, that you have people that really have, they dislike government. And they dislike any sort of restriction. And so they think Snowden is an absolute, you know, idol. He's a rock star. And, you know, they have the same feeling towards Bradley Manning and anybody else who releases any information, because information shouldn't be restricted. So I think we have an issue to talk about amongst ourselves. On how we, you know, what are limitations, if there are any, you know, to some of these people who are complete anarchists. Yeah.
Yes, I agree with Gary, and I understand that there's the concept of information is free. So I searched Bradley Manning on Google before I came this morning and printed out 20 pages of him. So there's a lot of information that's free. But in order to do that search, I gave them metadata about who I wanted to know about. Every search I've ever made, they have the metadata about it. So I think the concept of the kind of privacy is only available to people that are willing to move off the grid. The reality is, the modern world, privacy is different than it was in our parents' or grandparents' generation. And it's not possible to put the genie back in the bottle. Now, can the government maintain privacy of what it's doing? Well, it can certainly try. It has laws on its side that would, you know, punish Bradley Manning, in fact, very severely. They're proposing to punish him and the Snowden fellow if they ever apprehend him. So the government is better able to put the genie back in the bottle, but the private sector, there's no requirement that they do.
But should they be able to put the genie back in the bottle, gentlemen?
Well, that's the question. I don't think there's anything. I mean, it's a matter of personal opinion with all 300 million American personal opinions. You know, it's
everybody. So this is something the American people have to decide. They have to debate it. Because on the one hand, you can have anybody come along and release any secret government data, no matter how damaging, and they have a right to do that. That's one extreme of it. And the other is that the government gets to absolutely decide what it keeps secret and what not, and you can't question that.
And I think, you know, tied up in all of this is what can be done with the data. You know, this hasn't been used for political purposes, but we saw what happened with Nixon. You know, and with the use of data, imagine, you know, if Nixon had access to the NSA data today. So I think this is a very important conversation that the government, you know, our Congress has, and that everyone in the U.S. has.
And then looking back at President Obama's record on this, and when he's first running for office, he's very much on the side of he's really upset that the Bush is doing illegal information. But as he moves closer to being president, he becomes more conservative about what should be allowed and what shouldn't be allowed. He votes for compromises on control of data and stuff. My impression, he seems to think, and you guys won't have a chance to answer this, I think we're going to be running out of time, he seems to think that putting in a lot of legal rules solves the problem of what went on in the Bush administration. And I think the question we want to ask folks is, does that? Does tinkering with the rules and making you jump through legal hoops, does that solve the problem of all this information in either government or private hands?
With that question, I'd like to make one announcement, and that is that the state Democratic Party meeting will be July 13th in Cottonwood.
Right. And listen to Bill's show last week on BBID.org. been listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning after the 8 o'clock news, right here on AM 780 KAZM. It's beautiful out there, folks. Have a great day.